They say it takes a village to raise a child, but it also takes a lot of inner work and perspective to continue feeling like yourself in the journey of motherhood. Finding the right support before, during, and after pregnancy is crucial. It was such a blessing to have a conversation with the boob boss herself, aka Rue Kosa, founder of The Perfect Push. She's all about boobs, bumps, and babies, and trust me when I say that you instantly feel at ease with her. You can literally ask her anything and feel cared for and safe. Rue Kosa is a pioneer in Seattle who's an advocate for changing everything from healthcare, the treatment of women, and the role you get to play as a new mother. As a medical practitioner for 10 years, she changed paths to create a safe space for women to really feel cared for and to provide the best childbirth experience. We get to talk about how to deal with mom guilt, when to find emotional support during your pregnancy, and why there's been a huge shift towards natural birth and breastfeeding. Welcome to the Lifepreneur Project, where we have real conversations about business, life, and about making a difference in our community. In this space, we come together to share stories that help inspire you to act on your dreams. I believe that you can redefine your life at any moment with one new action. You always have another chance, another day to change your business, relationships, and future. Join us as we talk to leaders that have been there too. Giving birth, what happens after birth? There is so much I'm about to experience myself right now. And I'm already experiencing so many new things. And when I heard you on the panel at The Riveter, I really loved how when you were speaking, I was just empowered by your beliefs and your story. And I'm so glad that you're here in the community making a big difference into so many women's lives. So thank you for being here with me today.
Thank you for having me.
I do want to start from the beginning, though, with your story about how you got started.
How did I get started?
You have a big background.
I know.
It's so long. What part do you want to start at?
I think deep down inside, if we really go back to the things that hold us in when we were kids, like, I was the person who was always babysitting. I was the person who was always sitting next to the aunt who had the baby. You know, I was the person who was so curious about, you know, what babies ate and what they were doing and eating the baby's food. And just anything babies made me so incredibly happy. And I think when I first came to the States, I wanted to be a lawyer. Like, that was, I was like, I'm going to be a lawyer. And I think at the time we were watching L.A. Law back in Zimbabwe, and it was, you know, Blair Underwood, and I was like, yes, this is exactly what I want to do, sit in a courtroom and just argue my heart and soul out. And when I got to the States, the reality was so different, you know, and what you could achieve, what you could do, especially being an immigrant and trying to figure out the best and fastest way to make things make sense. And my mom used to be a nurse, and I kind of just fell into it. And I was like, okay, I'll go to nursing school. And I never looked back. I remember thinking to myself, you know, as soon as I can, I want to do labor and delivery. I knew I wanted to be around babies. And I worked my way, moved states. I moved from Texas all the way to DC just so that I could do labor and delivery. Put my house on, rented my house out. I just bought a house. I think I bought it in right after I graduated in early 2007. And less than a year later, I rented it out and moved to DC because I got a fellowship to do labor and delivery. And I've never looked back. Like, it's never felt like work. I think there are things about it that I, systematic things that I didn't like. And that's probably the reason I ended up opening my own business, so I could be my own boss. But everything that I've done and every step that I've taken since I really found my passion has been directed towards just doing anything and everything to do with babies. So it was very intentional. It seemed really crazy to a lot of people at the time. But for me, it was just so intentional. It's just in my happy place.
And now that you have your own business, I feel like, and I All I know is from what I've heard, and I've gone to her website, and everything seems so personal. Like, you really want to connect with people. So I'm kind of glad you got out of, like, the regular medical field. And what really ignited that? Like, what was your first step into deciding? Because that's a huge step, going into business for yourself, going from working for a company to working on your own and opening up your own practice.
I think the personal touch. The way we do medical care here in the States, it's a business, and you got to make money, and you can only, you know, be with a patient for so long. And I remember even when I had my son and I delivered at Overlake, where I used to be a labor and delivery nurse, and I felt like I delivered with my sisters, and I could tell how, because I was one of them in a sense, extra attention and extra care was given to me, because again, they were taking care of one of their own. And I just remember thinking to myself, everybody should have this. This should just be the standard of care. And we literally set the perfect push out to do just that, to be that sister by your bedside when you're having a baby, to be that familiar person, to be the voice of reason who brings you back. When I think at some point in time, every woman, as you're giving birth, you tell yourself, I can't. Or I've had, and I know I experienced it with my own son. I remember when I was in the throes of labor and I thought, I think I'm going to die. And just having somebody say, you're okay, you're doing great, you're safe, and knowing that you can trust that person because you've seen them before, you've sat down with them, you're comfortable and familiar with them, it's not just somebody you just met that day, makes a world of difference. And just being able to create that atmosphere or recreate that atmosphere for women out there, I think is priceless. I mean, that's what labor and delivery, bringing a child into this world, should be like for everybody. And it's such an honor. I literally spend my days going to birthday parties. Like, that's what I do. I attend birthday parties. And I always say to families when they choose to deliver with us or, you know, with me or our doulas, you are choosing one of the first people who will touch your child, who will see your child. And that is, it's such an honor for us and such a privilege, but it's such an intimate and personal moment that we always want to add to it. Even though we try and be background players, is how can we enhance that moment for the family? How can we give you a perfect push? How can you leave that room thinking, you know, wow, this is not what I thought it was going to be, but I couldn't have imagined it any other way. So it's insane. I can't believe I get to do this for a living.
And I hear that you do have doulas on the team, and mm-hmm. I know a lot of people, we know what doulas kind of are, but we don't know how important they are. But from people that have given birth and that have used a doula, they say it's so magical because I've been reading a couple books, and one is called Like a Mother. I'm not sure if you've heard of it.
Yes.
Yeah. And she talks about how when they researched mothers who went through birth and they talk about the birth and their experience, it's not just about that moment in the room where the baby's coming out of you. When they talk about their birth experience, it's the support before, the support during, the support after. So can you explain more about what you guys do that's a little bit different with your doulas that you have on your team and how you work with the women before, during, and after the pregnancy a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, our service is, there are lots of doula services here in Seattle. We are so blessed to have so many birth workers and so many dedicated, you know, birth and postpartum doulas who just want to support moms. Our practice is a little different because I am a nurse practitioner. So I provide more medical support to all our families. So one of the things that we've been, one of the struggles I always had, even when I worked as a labor and delivery nurse, I really didn't like doulas. I didn't. But I didn't understand them. I didn't understand their role. And I found one of the biggest challenges for me is I was the nurse who was at the bedside all the time. I wanted to be there. I wanted to get to know you. I wanted to talk. So I almost felt like the doula was kind of encroaching on my territory. So it was a really weird love-hate relationship. But then I went to Portland. And there's an amazing doula called Wendy Sharp, and she opened Doula Love. And I did my childbirth education training with her, and she was a doula. And I sat down with her, and I think for the first time, I really got to understand what the role and the place of a doula was in this, you know, in our setting, in a hospital labor and delivery setting. And as much as I can say I wanted to be that nurse who was at the bedside, and I tried to be, you always had, you know, competing loyalties. Staffing is always an issue. We can't run away from that. You get to leave, right? It's not like I can be there for 24 hours, or, you know, with this coming back and forth. It's just, that's not the way that we work. That's not the way our hospital systems work when you staff. So just being able to have that person who's consistent and consistently going to be there for the mom ultimately is what's best for the mom. And so what we ended up doing is finding a way with a perfect push that we could marry the two, that we could bring in a heavy medical knowledge, bring in my ability and perspective as a provider. So looking at it from a nurse practitioner standpoint and a provider, and looking at the patient more medically. And then also looking at it from the doula perspective and saying, you know what, holistically, how do I take care of that other part of you that, because of the, again, because of the way our medical system is structured, it doesn't necessarily always allow us, it doesn't always give us the time to do as thorough a job, I would say, as providers would want to do. So working at Overlake, there are lots of great OBs and midwives who really pushed the perfect push and would say, hey, there's a great service there. You should contact them. I think they will give you a little bit of extra service. And they really trusted me as a provider to answer medical questions for their patients without having to worry about, okay, what did Drew say? Because it sometimes can get a little dicey, largely because as the doula, and if I'm your doula, you're going to spend the most amount of time with me, right? I'm going to come into your home. I'm going to get into your real personal spaces. And so it can get a little complicated when providers and doulas don't necessarily can't really say an agreement, but if there's not an understanding of where one person's coming from versus the other. And as providers, at times we don't always have the ability or the luxury to be able to sit and explain everything to the doula, to then go and explain to the, you know, to help the families understand. And sometimes it's a provider you've never met, so they don't know who you are or the best way you take information or what your expectations were, your hopes, what your perfect push was. They don't know. So, but your doula does. And so I found it was really important to me to create an atmosphere in which we all could work as a team for the benefit of the patient, where at no point in time did anybody feel any angst or any hesitation, or the patient never felt as if someone wasn't working with another person and it wasn't to their benefit. So just creating that really safe environment and a cohesive environment. I think when we do that, the patient, the mom, the baby, they're so much better off for it. When everybody knows what's going on, everybody is, you know, working together, and it's a beautiful dance. And I just love, we've done so many deliveries now at Overlake with a lot of the providers there. And I just love what we've been able to create as a result of just being able to really work together and work together well. It's kind of magical. It really is magical when the two worlds come together and work well together.
You bringing that up, side note, because I actually haven't heard of this from anybody, but I'm a personal shopper, and I feel like boutiques or stores and sales associates and the owners of the stores and personal shoppers still go into a space sometimes where they feel like they're competing against mm-hmm. each other instead of working together. And the past 2 years, I've worked really hard to try to create more of a calm environment, because in the end, it's all about the client. It's yes. not a, and when we work together, it's so much better for them mm-hmm. than the store owner saying one thing and then me saying another thing. And the client is just kind of saying, they're like, I don't know, listen, yeah. like I like your clothes, but I trust your opinion.
I know. So it gets it's so important.
It's so, yeah.
And I think it can really make or break a family's experience.
Yeah.
So even with the nurse, just getting in there and having that warm and fuzzy relationship, mm-hmm. you know, when our doulas walk onto the unit and everybody's like, hey, and they know us. And, you know, it just, the patient just feels so much more, you know, secure and safe. And one of the biggest things that we, I talk about and I teach when I do a childbirth education class is about the safety cycle and how it's so important for a woman to get into that zone where she feels safe, she feels taken care of, she feels acknowledged, she feels respected during the labor process. It's not that you'll never get scared, but because it's a no, you don't know what it's going to be like and you're learning as you go. But when you've got people around you that you trust, and it doesn't matter if your doctor is, we did a delivery not long ago and mom went early and her provider was on the plane to Hawaii at the time and was like, oh my God. But, you know, and everything had been planned in such a way that she would be there for the delivery. Like she's one of those amazing providers who really does try to be there for her deliveries. And yeah. Just to be able to be there for the mom and say, you know what, it's okay. You know, we're all here. We know the plan. We know your, not the plan, I never call it a birth plan. We know your preferences and we're going to honor those and we're going to do everything in our power to make sure that you have a great experience. And again, you know, just working together. I cannot stress the importance of working together. We are a very evidence-based practice. I definitely will call this a medical-leaning practice. And it's not that I'm for interventions. I definitely have an understanding of all the interventions that are, you know, used in labor and delivery. I'm for judicious use of the interventions when you really need them. There's a reason why we have them. They save lives. And it's about using them appropriately and making sure the patient understands, you know, when you need to use them. And I've had moms who are 3 centimeters like, I need an epidural. I'm like, no, you don't. You want a vaginal delivery, right? Yes. So no epidural. And so, you know, I'm, yeah, we definitely have the hard conversations with the moms where we're like, no, suck it up, buttercup. We're going to have a baby today and we're not getting an epidural right now. But it's all in love. And I think when you're pushing a mom to a point where she doesn't feel like she's worried that her body can't do it because she's never experienced it before. And you can look at a familiar person and you get somebody who you can look at somebody's eyes who you trust and they tell you, you are safe and you can do this. It makes the world of difference. And as women, I think sometimes, I think people, you just need somebody to encourage you. You need somebody sometimes to believe in you more than you believe in yourself. Mm-hmm. To remind you that you are woman. We just need to hear you raw. To remind you that you've got in you this amazing power. You know, we've been doing this forever. And we can do it. We need a little bit of help, a little bit more support. To be able to bring dad or partner to the table and to step back and empower them to empower mom so that when baby comes out, I always laugh when people are like, mom's like, yeah, I had a baby. And dad is like, yeah, she had a baby. I'm like, no, y'all had a baby. So how do we get the couple to walk out of the room and say, wow, you know, I love it when partners are like, and when we had a baby and then this happened, because they were part of every single play-by-play experience. So we really try and work hard to empower the partners so that they can show up and show out, so they can be there for mom. I'm like, y'all got yourselves in this mess, so we can get ourselves out. We're just here to kind of help put things in order. But I really am passionate about making sure that partners do a lot of the hard work. And I think that stemmed from my own experience delivering at Oval Lake and having my nurse sisters. They completely took over. And I just remember my husband standing in the corner. And 4 hours and 44 minutes later, from the time we got there, we had a baby. And I remember saying to him, and he was like, oh no, what just happened? There's a baby.
Oh my God.
It just, I'm terrified of needles.
Me even too. Though I'm
terrified. Like, chase me around, start an IV. Even though I love starting IVs. terrified, totally terrified of needles. So one of the nurses was like holding my hand and talking to me while the other nurse was starting my IV. And in retrospect, that was great. They took great care of me. But in retrospect, I wish somebody had said, hey, you know, hey, Godel, come and sit right here. Hold her hand. This is what's going on. So it's so important to really involve the partner. So they feel a lot of times they've forgotten.
Yeah.
They just left out in the corner and it's like, oh yeah, whatever. We don't really, we concentrate so much on mom and baby and what she's going through. But they're going through it too.
Oh yeah.
And a lot of times they're just as scared. So to be able to support them and empower them and let them know what's going on so that they can feel like they can step up. Because most partners are like, well, I don't, can I do that? Should I do that? Is it okay? What can I do? Is this normal? Are they going to be okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so to be able to really be there for them as well so that they can be there for their partner, I think that is just, it's such a beautiful experience. And to be able to capture that, we do a lot of photography. So to be able to capture those moments for the family and they can look back and say, yeah, when we had a baby, this is what happened. And when you came out and then your mom did this. And yeah, I think it's radical to be able to do that.
Do you guys do any mind exercises to help beforehand? I'm all about being with your mind and trying to like push yourself because I'm scared of needles too. And there's things even in business are scary where you're taking a risk and doing something different and preparing myself mentally to a place where like when I'm getting a needle, I always think of the ocean. The ocean is my peaceful place and I find peace in that. And instead of focusing on the needle, I find other things to focus on. Do you work on exercises too like
it's
that?
It's so important for you to know where your happy place is.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about it, especially when moms say to me, Rue, I do not want an epidural. I want to go completely natural.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say to people, it's really mind over matter.
Yeah.
It's getting yourself to that place where you will say, no matter what my mind, what my body feels, my mind can overcome.
Yeah.
And finding those places that you can go to and those places you can reach into so that you can really, you can trust your body and you can guide your body through the experience. And I am such a big fan of sending moms to therapy. I definitely do a lot of, I think you should go and talk to somebody and just talk about your fears. Because I think a lot of times we don't acknowledge some of the real fears that we are now experiencing. I would probably say more so now, our generation, than the generations before us. Because most of us, our average mom at the perfect push is 35 or 36.
Mm-hmm.
We are waiting a really long time to have babies in comparison to what generations previously did. So I find that by that time, you know, a lot of moms either have had difficulty getting pregnant, have suffered a miscarriage or two, are having fertility issues. Like, it's not as simple as they thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And a lot of our moms, especially in the Seattle area, I would have to say, put a lot of time and a lot of investment in their careers. And they're my, you know, go-getter moms. They're like everything I've set my mind to. There's not a code I haven't cracked.
Yeah.
And then comes getting pregnant. And all of a sudden, it's like, why is this so difficult? Why is this not as straightforward as, you know, they say, you know, you find somebody, you go, mom, and, you know, you get happy and you have a baby. And we suddenly start finding out that it's not that easy, even with breastfeeding and all the challenges that come, not necessarily but because we are older, but because of some of the stuff that starts to happen to our body because we're, you know, our bodies are getting older. So I find that it's really sometimes important to make sure that moms do talk to somebody. And it breaks my heart when I have a mom who's so terrified of losing the pregnancy that they can't enjoy it. They're holding back because of what's happened in the past. So I definitely do get a lot of our moms to sit down and talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
I think half the time I'm like, they ruin my makeup all day long because we have cry sessions about, you know, what's really going on? What are you feeling? What are you thinking? But meditation, hypnosis, hypnobirthing,
mm-hmm.
is really cool. It's a really another great way for you to really train your mind to get into that peaceful place, to get into a place where it doesn't matter what else is going on, what your circumstances are, if you can find that place of inner joy and you can go back to, no one can take that away from you. just like what's going on in your circumstances, so or your environment. So it's really important to us to make sure that, you know, mom and partner, everybody comes to the table and is aware of some of the baggage that we don't even think we carry,
mm-hmm.
that you don't realize that you're holding on to stuff. But I think after doing this for over a decade now, and talking to moms, a lot of times I'm like, tell me more about that. And you start picking up on, you know, some of the things that we don't think about. So,
I also see when I'm 32, and when I speak to other women my age, and I never asked my mom about birth or anything until now that I'm pregnant. And my friends, too, until they got pregnant, they didn't really ask about the whole experience. And I think it's very interesting that a lot of my friends' moms, including my mom, they didn't care for doing a natural birth. They tried to breastfeed and gave up. But now it's going back to wanting to have this natural experience and really connect with the baby. What is that all about?
You know, I think we are definitely a lot wiser now, I would say, and medical system is kind of shifting from being a very patriarchal type of system where we as women were told what was going to happen to our bodies and how we were going to go through things. Not long ago, we were being strapped onto tables to have babies.
The same book, I read about it, and it was so, the beginning of the book talks about the history. I had no idea, like, it was so male-dominated, and many women were dying giving birth when it's something natural.
Yes.
And then they decided to bring women back into the room, and women started to take over again, because women are the ones that know. We're the ones that are pushing the babies out.
Yes, and listening to your body, I think now more than ever you start seeing, I remember when we first started, when I first started labor and delivery back in 2007 maybe. Back then, once you got an epidural, that was it. We just didn't even move you. We maybe rolled you from side to side. Fast forward now, we are getting women on hands and knees. We're getting women in squatting positions, even with an epidural. Like, we're like, what can we do? Because we've wised up and realized, you know, and thanks to a lot of work that's been done really by a lot of midwives out there, and just realizing how important it is to listen to a woman, to allow a woman to listen and to respond to her body, especially during labor. And with every intervention, and again, I'm not against interventions, it's just making sure you use them at the right time and appropriately and only when necessary. Because every time we do, it's like adding static to that communication line between the woman's body and the baby. And the more we intervene, the more static you have.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, mom and baby, I mean, they just can't hear each other through this labor process. And that's when you start seeing a lot more complications. And with more complications equal more interventions. And the more you intervene, and then before you know it, we're going to surgical interventions. And, you know, I think there's a point in time where women and providers were actually doing elective C-sections. Like, you could just go in and say, I want to have a C-section.
Oh, yeah.
And we're like, okay, let's do that. And then we're like, well, that's major abdominal surgery, so maybe we shouldn't be doing that. And so I do think we are, as women are definitely, you know, we're having more women providers.
Mm-hmm.
And as women are really saying, this is, it's my body, it's my experience. And as we're owning it, we're really starting to come into our own and starting to realize, okay, but maybe this isn't best for my body.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the best way to deliver. Laying flat on my back is not going to be the best way to deliver. Maybe squatting does make sense.
Yeah.
And you go back to all the ancient drawings and you'll see women squatting with their squatting
mm-hmm.
positions or ancient carvings. That's what you see women with, you know, the position that women. So I think it's so important, and we know with interventions, with epidurals, it limits your ability to move. So now that we're like, okay, so we know we want to be able to be more mobile. So epidurals might not always be the best idea.
Mm-hmm.
I'm loving nitrous oxide, and I'm hoping to
I heard of that, yes.
I'm hoping a lot more hospitals will start adopting it and giving women the option to, you know, get nitrous
mm-hmm.
oxide and have just a different, having more options. That are less permanent. I think that's, you know, and less invasive, I would say. I think that is really, really amazing. But yeah, I think we're definitely seeing a shift. We're seeing a shift towards breastfeeding. where now it's big. Like,
yeah,
everybody is talking about the benefits of breastfeeding. We are, you know, workplaces are now starting to honor and respect,
like, here,
woman.
Yeah.
Yes. So, you know, just being able to have spaces. I mean, the Riveter is just living proof of women now saying, okay, you know, we just don't want to have decisions made for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want to be in the room. We want to sit at the table. We want to sit at the head of the table. And, you know, in many situations, we want to bring the table and own the conversation, because a lot of these decisions are about us. And
yes,
so I'm just loving the shift that I'm seeing, and just watching women and, you know, Amy and the Riveter just being here.
Mm-hmm.
This is what it's all about. And it's just going into every aspect of our lives. And having babies and birthing is a really big part of it. I think it's a huge part of, you know, what a woman goes through.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm excited. I'm just excited to see that shift.
Yeah, me too. A shift I still see with my friends that have children now is that we want to go back into workplace. We want to go back to trying. Obviously, our lives have changed after having a child, but we want to try to go back to being ourselves. But a lot of the child work is still left on the woman, too.
Mm-hmm.
If she wants to go back to work, you have to find the babysitter. And usually that's still left on the woman. And when the activities come for the kids, the woman is trying to negotiate her time and figure out, oh, I need to get off of work at this time and pick up the baby at this time. I mean, there's a lot of men that are starting to be involved too, but it's still a lot left on the woman.
Mm-hmm.
I really hope that changes. But it's a hard thing, and I'm not sure why.
Well, you know what? I think it's a lot of it is us. I think a lot of times we get in our own way. Mom guilt is real. And I was actually thinking about this yesterday, because I got home probably around 8:45 and my boys were sleeping because I was at a delivery.
Yeah.
And so I sometimes spend time helping women bring their children into the world, or love on their babies, whether it's breastfeeding or helping with something that's going on. And at times I have to miss bedtime. So for me, with the boys yesterday, it was just a kiss on their cheeks and they were passed out. They probably didn't even know I came in to say goodnight to them. And it has taken a long time for me to make peace with that. It hasn't been easy. But every step of the way, I think the more you are true to you, and I find I love what I do, and my children can tell. And when I am with them, I am with them. Like, I do make the most of the times that we have, the quality time that I have. I don't necessarily think it's about the quantity. It's about the quality of the time that we do have together. And I think as moms and as women, you know, expecting women, women who are planning on expecting, women who do have children, sometimes the best thing we can do for our children and for our families is to just choose us. Because when you're whole and you're happy, that just permeates the whole home. And my children and everybody else is, they can just tell that, you know what, this is, she's centered, this is where she wants to be. I'm in a very, very good place. And I think I shared this when we did the panel. And for me, just having my son say that he wants to be a nurse practitioner, what? I was like,
so cute.
I know. I was like, oh my God, you want to be? But I think, you know, for me, it was that validation to say, he does see me. He knows I work really hard. He sees it. I bring them to work with me a lot of times. I think I had a meeting here last week and Tana was under the table making noise. Ty comes to the office. He knows he has to change the printed paper. He's only six. Changes the printed paper, empties out the trash. It's his clinic and I work for him. So he'll ask me, do we make enough money for me to go to Target? Did you make money this week? Can I go to Target? He has a sense of responsibility to babies. When I come home and he's like, oh, you had a delivery. Can I see the baby? And he's like, oh, it's cute. And I remember one of our babies, the couple named their baby Ty, which is my son's name, T-A-I. and this cute little baby, and he's mixed. He is white and Asian. And so I showed Ty the picture, and Ty goes, wow, he looks just like me.
Oh my gosh, that's so sweet.
I'm like, oh! And I remember telling telling the mom, and I was like, well, Ty is really happy. He's excited because, you know, Ty looks just like him. But again, that was another night where, you know, I left home in the wee hours of the night before they wake up, and I come back. Sometimes when they're sleeping, on my birthday, I was gone because I had a birthday baby. So it was mommy's birthday, but mommy wasn't home.
Mm-hmm.
And I came back and they had wanted to take me to dinner, and I settled for cuddles and cake because I was so tired. But again, you know, I think I definitely do make a concerted effort to have quality time with them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not easy.
Yeah.
It isn't. I still guilt myself. I think I put more pressure even when I know my husband's spending a lot more time with the kids. It still bothers me. Even though I want to go to work, like, I'm grateful that he's there and
mm-hmm.
he's such a hands-on dad. But it still bothers me that it's not me.
Yeah.
But I think that's just how society has set it up, like you said,
mm-hmm.
right? Everything falls on the mom. So we need to get out of our own way
mm-hmm.
and start creating the new normal. Start creating a world in which, yes, it is okay for you to work. It is okay for you to go back to work. I had a mom say to me, and this really changed my perception of working moms. And she said to me, when I went back to work, it was the first time I felt like myself again. And I don't think we allow ourselves or society, let alone other women, allow us to say that out loud. But I got it. She was like, and I love my kid.
Mm-hmm.
But seriously, when I went back to work, I was like, oh yeah. This is who I am. And there's this perception that you have a baby and, you know, you come into you and you come into your own. I'm
mm-hmm.
like, really? Okay. I don't know. I'm not sure every woman that is where she identifies where she wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that you want to be, you don't want to be a mother. You're not enjoying the process. Will, you know, I've had people say, so why would you have kids if you want the nanny to take care of them?
Yeah.
So why are you having kids? I'm like, that's not a fair question.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we would never ask those questions of men.
Yeah.
I think more often than not, women actually ask the questions of, you know, each other.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the men ask them of women. And it's not until we start supporting ourselves and supporting each other in our choices and that I think society will start seeing a shift, that our children will start seeing a shift. And I have
yes.
two boys, and for them, mommy working is normal. Mommy working very hard is normal. Daddy working hard and working very hard is normal too. So I hope one day when they have wives and she wants to go and do something or chooses not to stay home after having children or
mm-hmm.
chooses to continue to pursue a career, that is not something that he will make her feel guilty or less
mm-hmm.
than four.
Yes.
So, yeah. But charity begins at home. We need to really start a lot of introspection in how we treat each other and how we treat ourselves. It's
mm-hmm.
a lot of self-guilt. And I haven't succeeded yet. I'm working on it. I'm a work in progress. Every single day something does come up and I'm like, oh, I'm such a terrible mom.
But women always find a way. Like, I had a friend who, she goes on TV a lot and speaks. And one of the times the babysitter called in and she had to still go on TV and the baby was sleeping during that time. So they're on live television and they just put the baby in the car seat under the table. And luckily it didn't make a noise because it was live TV for 7 minutes or so. But the baby was under the table and she's like, I'm so sorry, guys. And then there were other moments where she said it happened again where, you know, the babysitter might not be able to come in. So they left the baby in the green room with other people kind of watching. And my mother did something very similar. Like, she wanted to go back to work as well. And there wasn't always a babysitter. So my aunt was in college at the time. And they just passed me and my little sister around during lunch break. So, I mean, women end up finding a way. Somehow you find a way to
we
just
do.
Make it do.
We do. And finding your village.
Yes.
Like, I think that is so important. Just surrounding yourself with women who understand
mm-hmm.
and will support you even if they're not making the same choices as you.
Yeah.
I think some of my biggest supporters are stay-at-home moms, and they'd be like, oh, no, you go. I'll, you know, bring the kids.
Yeah.
Do you need me to come and watch the kids? You know, knowing who's in your circle, bringing in people into your circle. I think a lot of times we put on a front where everything is perfect, and you don't allow yourself to be vulnerable enough to just say, I'm sucking at mommy right now. I feel like I'm sucking at mommy right now. And they'll be like, oh, no, you're fine. Let me tell you what I did. And I constantly have conversations with our parents, with our families, where I will share that I, with Ty, when I can't remember how old he was, I think he was a couple of months old, I dropped him.
Mm-hmm.
I fell asleep, and I dropped him. And, you know, people are like, what? I'm like, no, I'm telling you this because I remember at the time wanting to do it all. I wanted to hold him all the time. I wanted to, you know, after I fed him, I wanted to be the one to burp him and then change his diaper. And I wanted to do it all. And I just wasn't readily accepting help. And I just didn't even realize how tired I was. And it wasn't until I just heard that boom and scream. And I was inconsolable. Like, it was absolutely devastating for me. And I don't think we share those stories enough. And mistakes happen. You know, we don't always make the best decisions. Or we make decisions with the information that we have at the time. But sometimes the outcome isn't really what we wanted. And I think it's being able to sit, you know, next to you and say, okay, so let me tell you what I did. And this is how it worked out. And, you know, to save you from walking that path and maybe, you know, walking over or stepping into the same landmines, I think definitely being more vulnerable with each other and just being a lot more honest about how relationships change. I think that's another thing we just don't talk about a lot, with how your relationship with your partner, your husband, how that changes, you know, after you have a child, and navigating that and just saying, yeah, this is hard and I don't know if I still like this person and what did we do and what's going on. And I think the more we can really just build an honest village where we come together and we share ideas, we share our experiences, and we pull all the good stuff, you know, and we figure out where we went wrong so that generations after us, that's where we went wrong in breastfeeding. We just stopped doing it in public and we just started doing it in hiding. Now kids don't know what that looks like. It's like, what are you doing? And, you know, so how do we start creating an environment where we do have that communal parenting? We have that village effect. And it's so important, finding your village, finding those people who will, you know, tell you to keep going, even when you're tired, tell you're not a bad mom when you're like, I'm such a bad mom. And, you know, just pick you off the floor when you can't pick yourself up.
Mm-hmm. I think that's important. I think in different moments of our life, it's really important for us to find that support that we need, whether it's pregnancy, whether it's a new job, whether it's divorce, whatever it is. It
never changes. You always need other people.
You always need other people. What has been the most gratifying moment in your career? And I'm sure there's a lot because you work with so many people one-on-one.
Honestly, it's my son saying he wants to be a nurse practitioner.
I think that's so sweet.
I've seen so many amazing. Yesterday, I saw a birth that I'd cry at almost all my births now, because every birth is so different and so special just being there in that moment is nothing compares to that. But just knowing how hard I have worked and how much I have sacrificed and how much in turn my children have sacrificed a lot of times. And, you know, you're talking about your friend who had to keep her son her baby under the table in her car seat. There've been times where I've had to take my children to appointments. I talk to my family. I'm like, yeah, so I have to bring my son with me because I don't have anywhere to leave him. And they do come to work with me, and I know they would rather be somewhere else. The festivals, the events that we do, and my kids are there wearing their Perfect Push t-shirts. And so I feel they're really listening to my son go, I'm the original Perfect Push baby. And, you know, say it with such pride. I think that is the highlight of, and will always be the highlight of my career. It's amazing. And to still be able to enjoy every single, I don't feel like I work. I just, yeah.
And he sees it. That's why he wants to do it.
So mommy doesn't achieve. He really loves going. What is the mother thing that mommy really loves going to work to do? So yeah, it's really, it's great. It's such a good feeling. So I'm in a good place because of it. And I think in turn, my kids are in a good place because of it. So.
Is there anything challenging about your career? You just mentioned about crying at every birth. I know I went one night watching YouTube videos of natural births, and I cried because it was so beautiful, and seeing the mom's face and the dad's face and the baby, I cried so much. I can't even imagine what that's like to go through all the time.
It's hard not to get attached.
Okay, that's a good one.
That is hard.
Yeah,
I would say a lot of our families have become my friends. You just don't detach. You don't go through an experience like this with a woman or with a family, and then just go, okay, here's a check, here's my invoice, see you later.
Yeah.
It never works like that. In fact, one of my husband's biggest pet peeves is he's like, you never remember to invoice people. He's like, seriously, like, you did that birth like 2 months ago. I did? Did you? Oh, yeah, I may have forgotten. And I've tried to get better about that, especially from the business perspective and opening a clinic and having bigger staff. There are a lot more people I'm responsible for. But when it was just me and my side hustle in the trunk of my car, I didn't care if I got paid or not. And we do a lot of pro bono stuff as a result. And my team, I've got such a great team, and they are on board, and they'll do a lot of pro bono births and support for us. And I think it's because it's not work, but when you invest so much in people and in their families and in their experiences, it's hard to let go. When they're disappointed, I'm disappointed. You know, when they're feeling the throes of it, I am like pushing with them. And I'm like, push. I'm like, okay, I'm going to pass out too. Why am I holding my breath? It is so, I just can't explain it. I can't explain what it's like to just forge that relationship with a family. And when I go over and they're like, it's Auntie Rue. I'm like, yes. I have so many nieces and nephews now just from doing this. And so I don't know. It's just hard. It's hard to just step away. It's not a job.
Yeah.
And I think when it does become a job, it'll be time for me to quit. I'll know.
Your work is also like your baby.
It is my, I know, it's like my it third
is.
Baby.
Yeah,
it's
it like really is. Babies.
Yeah, and it's a girl. She's high
maintenance. Are there any exciting projects that you're working on right now that you can share?
Ooh, what are we working on now? For the first time, you know, I spent 5 years with amazing support from my husband, building up the Perfect Push as just this mother brand. And over and over, people, you know, as I'm asked to do more speaking engagements, and the question has always been, but who's you? Who are you? Who's Rue? And I've always been very honest with my families. I'm honest about how, you know, my deliveries and my relationship with my children, with my husband, how everything has changed over time. And one of the things that we did recently, starting this summer, is start working on branding me and just branding the person behind the Perfect Push, and just allowing me to just show a little bit more of the fun mom side of me, not so clinical, definitely not perfect, all my imperfections. I think I had a video that I posted not long ago of my son when he went potty and was trying to wipe himself and wiped everything in his mouth with the same tissue.
Oh my goodness gracious.
And I'm like, literally, I laughed so hard, I was like snorting. Like, I was like, I couldn't.
Oh God.
And I remember seeing there's a mom who somebody posted, and somebody was like, well, she probably should have stopped him from doing that. And, you know, I feel a lot of times we don't even get to share some of the challenges we go through because there are a lot of mom shamers out there. There are a lot of people who are just waiting to, you know, call you out on something. And, but I hope to just, you know, continue to be my authentic self. And I'm definitely not perfect. Just because I do this for a living and I teach people how to do it for a living doesn't mean that I don't make mistakes, that I'm not fallible, and that I'm always going to do it right. And it's really, I'm excited to go on that journey to just, yeah, expose a little bit more of the me. Women ask me, well, then how do you do it all? I'm like, I don't. Don't let anyone fool you. I don't do it all. I do a lot, and sometimes I don't even do all that well. But I keep moving. I think just being decisive and owning your decisions, owning, you know, who I am. I'm definitely, I think as I turn 35, 36 now, becoming a lot more comfortable in my own skin and just owning the decisions I make and being less apologetic about it. I think I was listening to Anna Wintour's masterclass and I was like, yes.
Oh my goodness, look
yes,
at you.
Own it. Make the decision, own it. Just, and it's been, considering it's fashion, which is your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, oh my God, yes. So I think, yeah, I'm excited about that. I'm excited to continue doing a lot more philanthropic work. We are launching the Perfect Push Foundation, has actually already been formed.
Oh my gosh.
And we are having a gala in May next year. And the Northwest Family Fest, which is a festival we've done for the last 4 years. We just had our fourth one. And we raised $3,300 for charity. And all of it goes to charity. It's going to be moving under the foundation. And I'm really excited to start giving back to my roots, where I came from. I do, again, charity begins at home. And a lot of people will say stuff like, oh my God, this, you know, why do you sound like that? You're from Zimbabwe? Like, da, da, da. I'm like, yeah, English is my first language. You know,
mm-hmm.
It was a British colony. But the truth is, there were a lot of people back home invested a lot in us. And, you know, in a lot of us, people who now live in the diaspora. And it's so important for us to now look back and say, you know, how can we support those countries where we came from?
Yeah.
And give back? Because a lot of us are very privileged and very lucky to do the things that we do. And I really want to try and inspire us to do as much as we can, especially around women and children, maternal and infant mortality. If you look at the statistics, when you look at the state of infant and maternal mortality here with women of color and immigrants,
I was just about to say something about that.
And so when we were sitting down and trying to figure out what the Perfect Push Foundation would do, and I was trying to come up with, I am into mantras. Like, I always have to find something. The Perfect Push is supporting the heart of parenting. As we're branding me, I was like, I want to be the boob boss. I'm owning who I am. I am the boss of all these boobs out there. I can get anyone breastfeeding. If there's a boob that makes milk, I can make it make more. I'm going to get that baby to feed off that boob. And if we don't, everybody's going to walk out in a good place, even if it's not the outcome that they came in looking for. So I was like, yep, I'm going to brand me as the boob boss, and it's bumps, babies, and boobs. And so when it came to the Perfect Push Foundation, it was like, okay, then, so what is the mantra for that? Like, what is the heart and soul? And for me, the question that kept on coming up was Asi Ani. And Asi Ani in Shona, or Majubani in Ndebele, means, if not you, then who? And that's what, you know, would be running around at home, and my mom would be like, do whatever. And you'd be like, who? And she'd be like, and you're like, who, me? And she'd be like, Asi Ani, who else? Who else is going to do it? If you don't pick up the mantle and you don't do it, who else is going to do it? And so I think definitely as a woman, a woman of color, and we're in a city where there are just not many of us. There are not many lactation consultants of color, let alone, you know, even in the United States. What can we do to start changing the narrative? And I think it's really about us taking ownership of what we need to do, of our need to step up. And this has gone on for long enough, it's not acceptable. But it's not until we start taking care of ourselves. It's not until we become the providers who are providing care to our own communities, are we going to see the shift. If nothing else, just everything going on in this country just shows you how deeply rooted the problems and the issues that we have are. And instead of trying to change people's minds, and trying to get people on board and trying to get people to, you know, to cure people of racism and injustices and, you know, just unequal distribution of healthcare. And just to deny someone healthcare is to deny their humanity. So I think it's time that we now step up and we say, how can we get more immigrants, more providers of color? How can we get more of us taking care of us? You know, invest in ourselves, because really and truly no one is going to do it. So that is the goal of the foundation. We want to give scholarships within the United States to train more providers of color, doulas, lactation consultants, immigrant communities, what's happening at our borders. This is not the dream that I came to America thinking what is happening. I don't think anybody who comes here, as somebody who did come here as an immigrant, I didn't come here thinking, it never occurred to me I would not be welcome. It never occurred to me that I would be persecuted. And I remember listening to the author of Like a Mother. And I think we've been so focused on the children that are going through that have been separated from the parents.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably even now feel this, having a baby in your belly. And she said, and it never occurred to me, how about the parents? How about the mother? Because I cannot imagine a world in which I would know my child is out there and I can't get to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not trying to minimize what the children are going through.
Oh, yeah.
But just to, as a mom, and so, yeah, I think that the time has come. The time has come that we, you know, women should be dying giving birth. That's not when there's so many things that we can do to prevent it.
Mm-hmm.
To die here in the United States is just, it's embarrassing. It is shameful. To have children in cages, shameful. I don't think we will ever get rid of the stain. And I hope we don't. I hope that it sticks so that we can never go back to this place again. So I'm really excited about the foundation and all the great stuff. We've got an amazing board. And I'm so excited to see what these amazing women, it's all women. So I'm excited about that. They're from all over the world and different nationalities. So it's so diverse. And I'm just excited to see what we can achieve together.
I think that is so, so beautiful. I mean, there's so much change that needs to happen. And like you said, it's not about changing other people, because you cannot. Mm-hmm. But whatever you can do within yourself,
yeah.
Because the more good that you provide to the world, the more is going to come back to you.
Right.
And it's going to go around.
Slap you in the face.
Yeah. And it's really hard, because you do, sometimes you see or you hear something, you're like, I want to change that situation, that person, but there's only so much that you can do.
Yeah.
And I think that's a huge step that you're taking. And I want to acknowledge that, because that is such a wonderful thing in the U.S., yeah, there's a lot going on with immigration, and that's a whole other topic, but I have experience with that already from friendships and my sister and her. They just found out that her boyfriend's mother has a very invasive cancer, and she is illegal, and the amount that they're paying out of pocket, and it's crazy, and the healthcare that they're giving her is not good. So the whole thing is just sad of what's going on. And she can't go back because her son is here. So, yeah, there's a whole thing with that. But healthcare here with immigration and stuff is very difficult. And so I'm glad that you're doing something about that. That's a big step. Listeners, everybody out there, if you could connect to any part of this message and want to get to know Rue more, please, please stay in contact with her. Where can people find you?
You can find us at theperfectpush.com. You can follow us on social media at The Perfect Push. You can follow me at The Real Boo Boss. Yeah, we're very active on social media. We've got our clinic in downtown Redmond, our lactation clinic, and we built it with just families in mind. It looks like home. Looks like a little home with little nurseries in there. You know, people are always welcome to come and drop by and say hi. I can never turn away a Bumble, a Berry, a Soul Boob. So yeah, we're in downtown Redmond and just so excited. And thank you so much for everybody, all the providers, Seattle community, everybody who's sending us. We are busy, and I didn't think I'd be able to say that in my first year. So I'm so honored to be able to do what I do, and I'm so grateful for everybody who continues to believe in us and continues to come to us and trust us with their babies and the experiences. So thank you to them. Just, yeah.
And I can't wait also to see more branding about you, because I think people will be able to connect with you more, and that will spread your message out.
Thank you. And thank you for having me. This was awesome.
Everything she's created is based on providing a better life and experience for others. And it's true, you can't change other people, but you can be the change that you want to see. And after 1 year in business, she's already making huge strides. It's a blessing to be around people like this, because the energy is truly contagious and makes you ask yourself, what more can you do to help the causes nearest and dearest to your heart? I had a lot of reflecting after this interview. My three biggest takeaways were, 1, mom guilt will be a work in progress for a long time, but you need to remember it's the quality of time with your children and not the quantity. 2, make sure you have the best supportive people around you during childbirth. You'll need someone to hold you and believe in you when you feel like you can't go on any longer. Your body was made to go through this process. 3, set boundaries that you need with your partner after the baby is born. Whatever you accept and allow will continue. I hope you take time to share what you learned today and what you can put into action too. Take a screenshot of this podcast and share it on social media, or send it to someone you think could really hear this message in their life right now. I'd also like to learn what your biggest takeaways are. Chat with us on the blog at myclosetedit.com, or join us on the private Facebook page, Lifepreneur Project, to find a community of new friends. Until next time, Lifepreneurs, remember that every day is a new day to make a positive change in your personal life and your work life.